Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Welcome back in. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score. Tom Doerr will tell 90s Bulls stories in an hour. Tom Thayer with Bears stories at 5 o'clock. You just heard Governor Pritzker's daily COVID-19 update. We'll air that every day at 2:30 here on the McNeil and Parkins Show. The update since yesterday, grim. 986 new cases with 42 more reported deaths. We're at nearly 7,000 cases in Illinois with 141 deaths across the state. Joining us now on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, kind enough to give us some time in a very busy time for him, he was excellent with us last week, is Dr. Rob Citrenberg, the Director of Infectious Diseases at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. Doctor, thank you so much for your time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you.
So how are we doing in Chicago and Illinois as a whole at flattening the curve?
Well, I think we talked about last week, and it still applies. You know, shelter in place, social distancing starts to work from the first day that you do it, but you don't see any results really until at least 2 weeks after you start. So I think we predicted last week there'd be more cases every day and probably more deaths, which there have been. But that doesn't mean that what we're doing isn't working. And I'll give you we have a little clue about what may be to come. They started shelter in place in the Bay Area in California maybe a week before we did. And just yesterday, they reported a flattening of the curve in the Bay Area. They had fewer patients with COVID than they expected based on prior modeling. And they think that's likely due to the shelter in place there. And that's kind of exactly the time that you would see it. About 2 weeks after you started is when you can start to see the effect. So yes, the numbers are staggering, they're sobering, but I don't want people to be discouraged because shelter in place, social distancing does work. And hopefully within the next week or so, we'll start to see some of the benefits of that.
Doctor, how much progress has been made on the accessibility of testing?
Testing is a lot more available, much more widespread than it was. You know, remember we got off to a really slow start. The government was kind of controlling all the tests, and now the private labs are doing them. And there's actually been a couple of new rapid tests that have been approved by the FDA, so we can get more people tested instead of having those terrible turnaround times of a week or longer. Now we're getting people's results within the same day, and sometimes just within even a couple of hours, depending on what you do them. So testing is much more available, but there's still not an unlimited supply of testing supplies and reagents. So at this time, we're still limiting our testing to people who are real sick, to first responders, where it's very important to know some other populations, but it definitely is more available. And there's going to be additional tests that are coming out within the next couple of weeks, including an antibody test, which is going to really, I think, be a game changer to diagnose not only people who have the disease now, but also people who had the disease. So we'll get a much better idea of just how prevalent this disease is.
when we listen to these updates from Governor Pritzker and he talks about the N95 masks that they've requested not being available, and they talk about converting McCormick Place for 3,000 extra beds and all of this, it's stark. The numbers that they're talking about are gigantic. Are you operating under the belief that the Chicago area healthcare system is equipped enough as presently modeled to handle what's coming?
We don't know. That's the honest answer. We hope so. And I think that the preparation of getting things ready, like McCormick Place, are very, very important, and trying everything we can do to secure additional supplies, additional ventilators in case we need them. The best case scenario is that we have the facilities and the equipment available and we never have to use them. And that's kind of what we're hoping for. We're hoping that we can, by flattening that curve, we can keep the number of patients less than the capacity to take care of them. So the best case scenario is you set up McCormick Place as a hospital and never have to use it. That's what we're hoping for. But in terms of exceeding that capacity, we don't know. We're learning lessons from places like New York City, where they've really struggled, and we're trying to do everything possible for that not to be the case here.
How about with medical personnel, people who have been working long hours, exhausted both physically and mentally, first responders, enough help waiting in the wings? Because I have to think some people are going to burn out very, very soon.
That's a great point. I think it's already starting to happen. I think when we ever have situations like this, people can usually hold it together for about 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, it's really tough. It starts to weigh on you. And particularly with healthcare providers, you know, a lot of them are getting sick, doctors, nurses getting sick. And that really, really weighs on everybody, and first responders especially too, because it's just constant stress. And I think to your point, it's really important to treat the psychological side effects of this as well as the medical ones. It's really taken a toll on our frontline providers, first responders, ER doctors, ER nurses. One of my friends is an ER doctor. His name is Scott Samlin. He was featured on CBS this morning on the National News Network with a video that is absolutely compelling. And it's just the true story of what it's like right now for these doctors and nurses. And it's a stark reality of where we are. And I think we really have to take care of each other, not only physically, but mentally.
We're talking to Dr. Rob Sitrenberg, Director of Infectious Diseases at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. When the president over the weekend in his update said that he had been shown a model where there could be 1.6 to 2.2 million deaths from COVID-19 in this country. And so the hope was, and Dr. Fauci spoke to it, that that number could be limited to 100,000 to 200,000 American deaths. That was a very startling shift in an expected death total from where they had been talking about it publicly. What modeling are you seeing as people try to manage expectations of what's to come?
I think the most recent numbers that the president alluded to and that Dr. Fauci verified, it's probably the modeling we've been looking at all along. Just that I think it's the first time that those numbers have come out in public. But if you look at the number of people who potentially can get infected and the mortality rate, then that's kind of where you come up with those numbers. But the important thing to know is that number is that modeling is based on how it is right now. If we are able to bend the curve, then we can substantially reduce the number of people infected and the mortality. So the modeling changes day to day based on the numbers that we get. But yes, that is a possibility. So about 30,000 people died this year in this country from influenza. So if 100,000 people died from COVID, that would be three times the number of deaths from influenza, which is a huge number. We're doing everything possible, obviously, to reduce that.
It's hard to hear those numbers and try and remain positive, as you suggest we should. I mean, if they're remotely close, wow, we're all going to know somebody. We're all going to be affected by this. That's where some of us fear it's going. It's hard to see a sunny sky, doctor.
It is, and I think you're right. At some point, everyone's going to know someone who's been affected by this disease, whether it's a family member or a friend of a friend. We're all going to know someone. But in terms of the outlook, you know, it doesn't really there are things we can do about it. I think it's so important in situations like this to focus on the things that you can do. It doesn't mm-hmm. accomplish much in my mind to worry about the things that you can't control. We can't control the past. We can only control the present and the future, and that's the way we look at it. And it just makes us work harder to get people better, to develop new treatments, to work harder on keeping people apart, because those are the things that we can control. And that's how it's essential to have that outlook in order to move forward.
So then along those lines of what people can be doing, we know we should be washing our hands as often as possible. We know we should not be touching our faces. We know we should be social distancing. We should be limiting going outside of our homes for only essential things, whether it's essential business, if that's how you work, or going to a grocery store or getting medicine. We're getting questions about things like getting packages at your home, or once you get that food into your house, whether it be from takeout, delivery, or a grocery store. What about the items that you're bringing into your home? What precautions should be taken, if any?
I think just to be careful. And remember, the vast majority of the transmission of this infection is by what we call respiratory droplets. Those are the droplets that come out of your mouth when you cough that directly infect someone. You can definitely get it from touching a surface also and then touching your face. But the vast majority of transmission is by that route. Now, is it possible that theoretically you could bring something contaminated into your home and then contaminate yourself? Yes, it's possible, but it's thought to be much less likely or much less common than the other method of transmission by respiratory droplets. So if you're concerned at all about your packages or your surfaces in your house, you can easily disinfect them just with a Lysol wipe. You can disinfect your counters. You can wash your hands. There's no evidence at all that takeout food can be contaminated in a source of infection. But anything you can do to reduce how much you touch or how much other people touch is good. But I really don't think that's the primary route of how this disease is transmitted. It's the virus doesn't move. People with the virus move. And that's the primary way it's transmitted. So if you want to stop that transmission, people can't move close to each other.
Doctor, putting the numbers aside, if you can, and numbers are the best way of determining things, but just from your observations in places you have gone, do you think we are taking this as seriously as we need to?
I think now we are, and I think, Dan, you brought up last week the issue where it looked like in Indiana the grocery stores are real crowded. I don't see that as much. Even in the last week, I've seen a lot less people out. Even in the grocery stores, on the streets, there's nobody. I live downtown the city. The city's a ghost town during the day and at night. So I think that now people are definitely paying more attention to it. I just read earlier today that the governor of Florida finally ordered mm-hmm. shelter in place today, which is mind-boggling to me that it took so long. So, you know, even in Florida, they're getting the idea that this is a big deal. There were some reports from a spring break trip that some students from Texas took to Mexico, and more than half of the kids on that trip got infected, and that was just a week or 10 days ago. So I think people are really waking up now, and I think the compliance with social distancing is a lot better than it was even a week ago. And I also think now we're starting to hear about some young people who are getting sick. And I think that really has an effect on everyone saying, oh, this is not just a disease of old people. We really need to take this more seriously. So I'm encouraged with what I see. It's a little eerie to look out the window and see nobody on the street, but that's probably how it should be.
There has been talk of malaria drugs working. Do we have any treatment for this? A vaccine? What's a reasonable timeline? There's a lot of misinformation or conflicting information as I try to read about medicine for COVID-19.
There sure is. And part of the problem is that anybody really can make a YouTube video and post it and their thoughts, their ideas about treatment. So it's so important to just follow the science and follow people like Dr. Fauci, who will always give you the truth. So the drugs, there is some hope and some promise with the drugs and some of the older malaria drugs, a drug called chloroquine, which has been used for many, many years for treatment of malaria, and a similar drug called hydroxychloroquine. These drugs have been around for a long time. The data is small, but it's promising. We don't have results of what we call controlled clinical trials, where half of the group gets the drug and half of the group gets a placebo. We don't have those results yet, but there's a lot of smaller series that suggest there's a benefit of those drugs. There's another drug being studied called remdesivir that looks like it may be promising. Again, we don't have enough information yet. So there's a couple of other drugs that are under study as well right now, too. So I think that even in the last 3 weeks, we've made tremendous progress in identifying potential drugs that will be of benefit. As far as the vaccine trials are underway, and they takes about probably a year to a year and a half to be able to get a vaccine out where it can be used. I think the good news about this is, many people are expecting a second wave of coronavirus infection next year, because a lot of these viruses stay in what we call the seasonal portfolio of viruses. We had that swine flu epidemic back in 2009, but we still see swine flu cases every flu season since. And we're expecting that coronavirus will be around next year, but we'll be much, much better prepared to handle it next year. We'll have very likely have drug therapy. We'll have vaccine therapy. We'll be much better prepared to handle it. So we just got to get through this wave and just try and get through it as best as possible. And hopefully in the future, it'll be a lot brighter.
Doctor, I talked to a friend on the telephone Monday, and I would be surprised if a few of our listeners didn't have a similar experience. And he said, I think I had coronavirus. I had a fever for a few days. I moved past it. I was breathing better in a few days. If I had it, I'm no longer contagious because I've been symptom free. If one suspects he had coronavirus or she, what's your recommendation? What's your advice to him?
Right now, I wouldn't do anything. You're exactly right, by the way. We know from studies that were done in Washington State, which was the first state that had a real outbreak in this country, that they could tell from studying that virus, it had been in that population. It had been in the community for probably 6 weeks before the outbreak was identified. And there's no reason to believe that wasn't the same case here. So people who had the flu and their flu-like illness in the last month or two, many of them probably had COVID and never knew it, which is, I guess, on the one hand, it's scary. On the other hand, it's reassuring because you had it and you recovered. And remember, the vast majority of people with this illness are going to recover just like a flu. So right now, we think the best knowledge, we think that if you've had the disease, you're immune and you can't get it again. We don't know for sure. Takes time to figure that out. One of the questions you had earlier about some of the testing, this antibody test that's going to be coming out hopefully shortly will answer that question, because you can tell from your blood if you've had the disease. And I think that will be very useful to know. So right now, recommendations are, even if you think you had it, you should still take all the precautions. But once we know a little bit more about where the virus has been, who's had it, then we may be able to loosen up some of our recommendations for people who have already had it.
So, doctor, if you have it and then you recover from it, do we know yet if you can get it again? And I'm sorry if you addressed that.
Yeah, it's actually worth reiterating because it's such an important point. The best available information is that you cannot get it again. Again, the important thing is that, can you get it again next year, the year after, the year after? We don't know that. But right now, it seems like if you get it and you recover from it, you can't get it again. There were some reports from Asia about suggesting that some people were getting reinfected, but I don't think that we believe that to be true. Right at the present time, the current knowledge base is that if you had it and recovered from it, that you can't get it again, at least in the immediate future.
I was hoping with Dr. Rob.
sorry, Danny.
Go ahead, Matt. Sorry about
that. Yeah, Rob Sitrenberg, our infectious diseases expert, with us for another few minutes on the score on the McNeil and Parkins show. Sorry about the interruption, Parkins. I was just wondering, while your expertise is in infectious disease, I'm certain you can address this. Mental health right now is critical for people. Getting fresh air, getting out and exercising somehow, some way, being responsible with it, because sedentary lives can cause darkness for a lot of people, especially those prone with depression or any other mental health issues of that capacity.
You could not be more right. And the recommendations all along have been, even with shelter in place, you can go outside, you can go out, you can walk, you can run, you can get fresh air, and you should do that. You just can't congregate. That's the difference. And so we don't want people to stay cooped up in their homes without getting any fresh air, because that is really important for mental health. Just to be out, just take a walk every day, but just to do it by yourself and not in groups, extremely important. I think, and it's unfortunate the mayor had to close down the lakefront and some of the parks because people were not really doing that. They were congregating in groups. It would be nice to have a lakefront to be able to walk on or run on. Right now, we can't do that. And I think it's going to be a challenge as the weather gets warmer in the next few weeks. People are really going to want to be outside, and they should be. They just can't congregate. But I think, to your point, you've got to do everything possible to keep to clear your head, to get out of your home and just get some fresh air and some sunshine. It will do everyone a lot of good.
Doctor, at the beginning of this, the recommendation in America was don't wear masks, save them for the hospital workers and the people who are actually sick. That is not how it had been handled in Asia. And I've read over the last 48 hours some conflicting reports about maybe changing that official policy in America. Where are we at now with wearing masks if you don't have COVID-19?
That's probably the single most controversial part of this right now. There's a lot of conflicting data about whether they're beneficial or not. I'll tell you this, that when you wear a mask, the mask, and it's kind of a hard concept to understand, but the mask doesn't really prevent you from getting sick. It only partially does. It prevents other people from getting sick from you. Let's say you have the virus, don't have symptoms yet, or you have some mild symptoms. You put a mask on, that mask will block those droplets from coming out of your mouth. And so the best way to look at it is that masks don't protect each of us. They protect all of us, if that makes sense. So if the entire population wore a mask, you could knock down transmission drastically just by doing that. The practical problem with that is the supply. It would take billions of masks for everyone in this country to be able to wear a mask every single day. You have to change your mask periodically when they get dirtier and they get damaged. So it's the supply. We just simply don't have the supply of masks to do that. And we need all the masks that we have for our healthcare providers, our first responders who are taking care of these patients. So they do work, but they work primarily by, they prevent us from getting other people sick rather than vice versa. And I had to go to the grocery store the other day and I saw maybe, I don't know, 20 or 30 people in the grocery store wearing a mask, and at least half of them were not wearing them properly. They were over their mouth and not over their nose. They weren't, they were just kind of flopping around. So they were of no benefit whatsoever to that person or to other people too. So in a perfect world, if we had an ample supply of masks, that would be a great strategy. Now, one thing we've done in our hospital and our healthcare system this week, we started what we call universal masking. So everyone in the hospital now wears a mask at all times, and that's to prevent the transmission of this virus from person to person inside the hospital. And why it's important in the hospital is because you have sick people there and you have people who are more likely to have the virus than, say, at the grocery store or walking down the street. So if you have a mask, I'm not going to tell you not to wear it, but just to understand there's a limited benefit to wearing the mask out in public.
Thank you, Dr. Sitrenberg. A couple more minutes with him, and to the texters crushing me for not listening. I promise I was listening. My line cut out there. So I appreciate you, Doctor, for being very kind with me, asking you to repeat something that evidently you had just said. I dropped out for about 45 seconds. There is a 1A story here, which is obviously the healthcare crisis. But there is a 1B story that many people are concerned about, which is, of course, the economic impact of this. I have been struck by some municipalities, some governors are saying, it's indefinite, the stay-at-home order. Some people are extending it 2 weeks at a time. You mentioned how Florida finally got around to doing it. Toronto isn't, it already has a stay-at-home order through the end of June. What has to happen in your mind for the medical community to be able to make a recommendation for any semblance of a return to normalcy with the economic side of this? Because I can't imagine we're going to be able to get to zero cases before that 1B part of the story, the pressure on that to resume normalcy, kicks in.
Well, the first thing that has to happen is the cases have to peak. So we're going to be watching that very carefully. Right now, we're anticipating in Illinois that peak's probably going to be about 2 weeks from now. And then after the peak, it depends how fast that slope comes down. I think you're right that we may not get to zero. Though if you look what happened in China and in South Korea, the number of new cases there is close to zero. So they've actually gotten the number of cases down there. Before we kind of release people back into society, we have to have a high degree of certainty that the number of cases remaining is not enough to sicken the rest of the population. So a lot of it's based on mathematical computations about when that time is. But whenever that time is, and I think we talked about it last week, it's going to be longer than most people think or longer than most people want. We talked about that target about 8 weeks, and that still seems pretty reasonable. It would be shocking to me if we're able to resume really completely normal activities before that 8-week period is up. It could be longer too. And the important thing is just everyone has to hang on, because the worst thing that can happen is that we release people back into society prematurely, then you can have a big spike in disease and start the whole process over again. So the public health officials are looking at this very carefully. They're going to be really interested to see if we can bend the curve with the social distancing that's already in place. And if we're able to do that, then that may shorten the duration, but it's not going to be quick. There was no way it was ever going to be a 2-week solution or even a 4-week solution. It's going to be longer than that, but hopefully not too much longer.
And then one sports related question. There are leagues talking about quarantine leagues, the NBA completely isolating and playing in a bubble in Las Vegas, or testing baseball players every single day and then resuming games with no fans. Is that medically feasible in your mind to quarantine an entire sports league and try to play within some sort of bubble?
I know they're trying to do that because they're trying to capture whatever revenue they can from the games, which is important. It is and it isn't. It's certainly safer to do it without fans, but it's not completely safe for the players. Remember also, the players are coming from all over the country. So let's say you're in Las Vegas and just say, for example, there's no disease in Las Vegas, but you have the New York Yankees coming where there's a lot of disease in New York. And so is it okay for them to come and play? Is there a risk of infecting other people that are there? I think it's a risky strategy. In my opinion, the safest strategy is to wait until we're sure we're out of the clear before resuming these sports. And I understand the pressures, and they're very real for the team owners and for the leagues to get the games going. But I would caution against being too premature. There's too many variables involved in that. And I think it's tragic what's happened, but we have to, the primary mission has to be the health of the population, and sports are going to come second.
Dr. Rob Citrenberg, the Director of Infectious Diseases at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. Doctor, I'll end it the same way as last week. We know you're incredibly busy. If you have time for us, we'd love to have you back on. Our audience is continuously texting in that they both appreciate it, and they have a lot of questions. So thank you for your time, and whenever you have time, we'll have you back. Thank you.
It would be my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rob. Very good.
That's Dr. Rob Citrenberg from Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. He's been absolutely fantastic, so we'll get him on again as stories and questions necessitate it. Tom Dore at 4 o'clock, Tom Thayer at 5. I promise I did not pull a McNeil and Parkins there and just like not listen to the guy's answer. I dropped out for 45 seconds. I came back in. I promise. I swear. It was a risk. I was like, the information is really important. I have to ask it, and if I look stupid in the face of it, then, you know, so be it.
Dude, he covered you like he's been doing this for 20 years, as smooth as a gravy sandwich in covering your not listening ass.
Hello, Danny.
And he drops out.
Oh, man.
We're
Danny
due
can't
for,
take a joke.
Yeah, we're due for a timeout. Anyway, it's the McNeil and Parkin Show mob on Sports Radio 670.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Score
station. McNeil and Parkins flashback. Flashback.
Tony, if you're telling one Dave Wanstead story, we know him. But if you're telling, I want to tell you a story, and at the end of the story, you know everything you need to know about who Dave Wanstead is. What story are you telling?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's... you got me on that. I didn't think about that.
So awesome. Coming. Hey, Tony, can you come on and tell some stories with Dave Wanstead? I didn't think about that question. I'm sorry.
I've been with this guy for 35 years, but I can't remember a thing about him.
It's perfect. Speaking of perfect, not a bad time for my line to drop out again there, was it, Mac, at the end of that last segment?
Oh, just splendid timing, yeah. Splendid timing.
Yeah, this is a real hoot. Bottom of the hour brought to you by North...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic.
They would.
Including healthcare professionals.
Yes.
Thank you for helping to keep us safe. Yeah.
Dr. Rob Sitrenberg was terrific again today. And at the tail end, I'm glad you asked him about some form of NBA bubble. And he didn't come out and flat say irresponsible. But that's basically the tone of what he suggested, that it would, you know, we found out 2 weeks ago, then the forecast is 8 weeks at the minimum before you can actually, you know, accurately gauge where this thing is going. So we are at least 6 weeks away, I think, from anybody signing off on anything. And I sure hope that even after that 6 week period, people can just hang on. It's easy for me to say as of today. I have an income, and there are people out there who are suffering, and I just hope people can be patient. That is my wish for 2020, and that's it, that people are patient, and we can get through this thing and flatten the curve as to the best of our abilities, because it's not up to the government. It's up to us as citizens to do it.
Yeah, and he alluded to like a huge part of the problem, right? So if we started this in earnest, call it 2.5 weeks ago, well, Florida just had the order today from their governor, and their stay-at-home order does not include religious practices. So
Passover and Easter are coming up.
Uh-huh.
So you know what I mean? If people just go into full churches and synagogues, it's not really going to be practicing safe social distancing. So it's a problem where everybody doing it differently. And last I checked, a lot of baseball players down in Florida, you know? So when you talk about sports leagues resuming, it's just, even if, you know, New York comes through it on the other side, and when they come through it on the other side, by the way, but like that's just where the epicenter has been. Okay, well then the hotspot in New Orleans is behind that, and then in Miami it's behind that, and then in St. Louis it's behind that. And so that's the issue here, is that we've got to get through it for a lot of places in order to feel like we can resume some normalcy as a nation, because obviously the NBA, Major League Baseball, things like that, that's a national enterprise. That's not just some sort of local undertaking.
Right. And we actually are only a week and a half into this. I know the week when I was out, the previous week, sick, there was very little activity downtown, but the order that came from government didn't come until a week ago this past Saturday, so we're only a week and a half into shutter in place officially. It was 5 o'clock a week ago Saturday afternoon, I think it went into effect.
Right,
so not even 2 weeks.
It's crazy because you're right. The week before that, which was the week after Scorehouse, when you were out sick, that was when all of the sports leagues started shutting down because Rudy Gobert tested positive in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that a lot recently. Man, that was 2 weeks ago, right? I think that was a Wednesday. 2 weeks to the day when Rudy Gobert tested positive and the NBA closed down. Feels like it was 2 years ago in terms of news stories.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Kevin Durant, when we learned about Kevin Durant and Sean Payton. Yeah, and the list will keep growing. And I don't think I mentioned the other day, and I just want to throw a shout-out for friends and family and fans of local folk rocker John Prine, who used to be a mailman in Rockford. He has tested positive for coronavirus. I'm a big fan of his from many, many years ago. Unfortunately, did not see him perform when he was a younger man.
Damn.
That was a drag because his fastball was lost, but a great singer-songwriter, not doing real well, he said. To nobody in particular. Did Parkins' line go out again?
Must have, yeah.
There it is. Coming up at the top of the hour, we shift gears a little bit and do some 90s Bulls with their former television voice, Tom Dore. And I have been thinking about documentaries of late because while I'm looking forward to seeing the ESPN Bulls doc in its entirety, because it was very exciting, even for a non-NBA fan, to just see the buzz that was created by that second three-peat team, 96, 7, and 8, Seattle and Salt Lake City twice. I'm looking forward to it. But for me, what I would love to see somebody put together, and I don't care if it's the most professional thing in the world or not, doesn't have to be, it's a quick request, was the three cups the Blackhawks won over the last decade. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of that first cup, even if it's just that season encapsulated. It's one thing to throw the games out there, and I'll try to find a way to watch a couple of them. I'm going to watch Game 5 of that Nashville series, first round, the improbable win at United Center when the Hawks were down a man and pulled Antti Niemi and wound up tying the game, skating 5-on-5 with an empty net, Marian Hossa in the box, scores the game winner. I'll watch that game, but I'm not going to sit through each and every game of a playoff series. Give me a nice, tight 2-hour documentary on the 0-9-10 Blackhawks, and that would suit me just fine. But Tom Dore will talk about the 90s Bulls, and during the 5 o'clock hour, Tom Thayer checks in. Not a ton of NFL news. The NFL is continuing to operate pretty much business as usual with the draft. We debated that in the first 20 minutes of the show, and I'm sure it's something that will come up with Tom Thayer during the 5 o'clock hour. Do we have Danny back yet, Danny?
I'm here, Mac.
Hi, kiddo.
I'm on the other connection. I apologize for whatever is
not
happening.
Your fault, man. Not your fault.
No, I know. Just feel like I'm juggling all sorts of things over
here.
Hey,
if there's one thing I've learned how to do over the years, it's keep talking and say absolutely nothing.
You did a nice job there. That was very, very impressive.
Thanks.
Yeah, so yeah, Tom Dore in 20 minutes, like you said, and the Hawks. Did I hear you mention the Hawks in there somewhere? Yeah, well, let's go. Let's. Why can't some local, you know, NBC Sports Chicago, someone local, put together a documentary on that team? Like, I don't know if that run is necessarily 30 for 30 worthy, just because of you know, the popularity of it. If I'm being honest, I'd be a little surprised if ESPN did it, but. Let's go. NBC Sports Chicago. They've got all the footage.
Weren't the Blackhawks voted the team of the decade by some outfit? And a tremendous financial story, too, how they turned a business that was just not profitable into a tremendously successful, financially solvent operation, just printing money for the last 11 years. I think it's enough for a doc, but I'm a hockey fan. And if you're a football fan, I was tickled to see that we're rebroadcasting the week crown their ass game. The Denny Green game is coming up on the Score this coming Sunday, Danny. How about that?
That's not bad, man. Like, I like what the Score is doing. Instead of just throwing games on the air, doing some sort of extra, you know, thing for it. The Cubs playoff push is starting today. Joe Ostrowski, Ron Coomer, and Pat Hughes will be doing a little bit of an intro to the game. And then after the third and seventh inning, they're going to be doing commentary on what happened up until that point in the game. And then they'll do a little post-game show where they'll take calls. So you could relive the entire Cubs postseason starting tonight at 6 on the Score. And then, like you said, classic Bears games airing on Sunday. And I know Jeff Joniak is going to be doing some commentary with that as well. For the guy who still does the DVD walk-up, right? Like, these are like the extra scenes, the bonus features on the DVD.
That game against the Cardinals really was the springboard game, I thought, for the Bears in that Super Bowl season. It was week 6. Brian Urlacher willed that team to victory. Mike Brown played a huge role in it, and so did Devin Hester. What we forget is there was a gift at the end. The Bears should have lost the game. Neil Rackers out of the University of Illinois missed a short field goal for the Cardinals that would have won it. But, man, thank goodness he missed that, because we got the great Dennis Green post-game news conference. We Bears were who they we
Four
thought
picks
they
against
were.
Grossman and two fumbles. What did you see about the Bears? We shut them down that way?
No, the Bears are what we thought they were. What we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Thanks, Coach.
That's an all-timer.
It really is.
Oh, my God. I'll take that over Jim Mora wanting to throw Saints fans out of the stadium for cheering one of the Bobby Joe's or Billy Joe's injuries or playoffs. That's my favorite news conference by any pro football coach. That's absolutely spectacular. And that was the first time we saw Jerome Boger blow a whistle. Danny,
what the game is known for.
Yeah, it was the first time he did a Bears game, and we're like, hey, who's Jerome Boger?
Jerome Boger, who is a rookie NFL official, referee, was an official the last couple of years in the league as a line judge, and before that was a very good referee in Conference USA, where the supervisor of their officials was Jerry Austin, an NFL official. So they've had a very good eye on Jerome for years, and he's one of the bright young referees in the NFL.
After reviewing the play, he has an incomplete pass. The ball skipped into the receiver.
The Tanny would access that as quickly as he did with us just riffing off of it is what makes him the best in the world. That's remarkable.
He also is your producer, so, I mean, he's probably got a folder of just all things NFL officials.
I will throw a bouquet at his feet for that one. He's
fantastic.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, he's so good you almost like take it for granted because he can get to anything so quickly. And for officiating, my guess is he would not have had that quite at the tip of his fingers if it was the old B&B show. But like, Dan McNeil could break into any sort of referee talk at any moment notice. So yeah. He's got it available.
And a good scouting report by Mike Tirico from Monday Night Football's crew.
That's my favorite part about it. I don't ever remember a crew talking about an official on their debut. Oh, we've been looking at this guy for a long time. Here he is.
He's on the Jerry Austin tree. Yes, a great rules guy. That's great.
And the texters are hitting on what I noticed there, too, because everybody remembers if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. We let them off the hook. Like, everyone remembers those drops. Those drops lived on Chicago sports radio for like 10 years continuously on every show afterwards. But I like the thanks coach at the end.
That is good.
It's from that media member who's like, oh, thanks, coach. You just made my story real easy.
Perfect punctuation. Yes, nice long pregnant pause, and he's walking away. Thanks, coach. That was good.
It's absolutely perfect. I don't know who that was. I couldn't tell. Maybe it was an Arizona reporter, but it's just like it's got the right amount of media snark attached to it. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah. I'm gonna just linger here on this. You mentioned this story, and it's just stupid enough for this show to get in. Tom Brady and Chris Godwin. So Brady goes to Tampa, and he's obviously going to get number 12. But Chris Godwin was one of the five most productive receivers in the NFL last year, so he's not some nobody. And in the release of Brady becoming official with Tampa, they included the fact that there was no compensation from Tom Brady to Chris Godwin. Tom Brady has made over $200 million in his NFL career. Chris Godwin has barely made two. Are we surprised that Tom Brady is so cheap in not paying up for Chris Godwin?
Well, we don't know that to be the case just yet. I'm sure Brady has something in mind. I found it really weird the Buccaneers would want to include that in the damn news release. That he's going to wear 12 and Chris Godwin gets nothing and likes it. That's really odd to put that in a news release. Brady's got to do something nice for him. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy. Send him and his family out for dinner or something. Do something nice. A nice gesture is all. Or do you think it needs to be more than that? You think it's more than a big-ass $1,000 dinner bill? You think he should buy him a car?
$25,000 to $75,000 feels like the price range for Tom Brady. Like these are extraordinary circumstances. Like Chris Godwin is a really good player who is coming into his own, right? Like he's going to be he's probably a fourth, fifth round fantasy football pick last year. This year he'll probably be a second, third round
yes.
pick. He's becoming more of a household name, and so changing your jersey in the relatively anonymous world of wide receivers for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, like it hurts his marketability a little bit, but obviously you're going to give it up to the Hall of Fame quarterback. You're going to give it up to the GOAT. And so, yeah, when the financial discrepancy is that significant between the two players and it's not, you know, some scrub offensive lineman giving up the number 12 or something like that.
Scrub! Some hamburger squad guy wearing number 12.
Well, yeah, it's not the third string quarterback who's a seventh round pick who had never worn the jersey before. Like Chris Godwin in the number 12, it meant a little something to him. It had
what's
some
protocol on
value.
This? There have been guys who have given up their numbers, but in exchange for thing. I'm struggling to remember. And I'm thinking locally, did anybody give up a jersey number for somebody who came in with that type of Hall of Fame credentials and that was the number they wore their entire career? So the guy who was here and had that number, I can't think of anything locally. There have to be precedents.
Well, Mac, Benicio Del Toro in The Fan gave up something for number 11, but it's not what he wanted. Not ideal situation for Primo.
That's right.
It was his life. If you haven't seen the movie, folks, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Jeez. There's got to be a local example of it. I don't know what it would be. Texts are suggesting that the Bucks just fooled everyone and it was an April Fool's Day thing, and of course Tom Brady's going to compensate him. Is that possible?
Well, I think it's, you know, it didn't read to me like an April Fool's thing.
What a
gag,
huh?
Yeah,
right.
It seemed really matter of fact. So I don't know. Maybe that's the way you do get in April. It's not funny though. There's nothing funny about it. I'm sure Brady will do something. Brady will do the right thing, right? You know, and he'll throw him the football. Most importantly, he'll make him a household name because the people in Tampa say he's got a lot left in the tank. He's Tom Brady. There was no fade in his game. And Frank Reich said that. We talked early on about Tom Brady's future, and we thought it made sense in Indianapolis. Frank Reich has talked in the last couple of days about how much love he has for Tom Brady. Interesting to be doing that a couple of days after signing Phillip Rivers to a $25 million deal.
Yeah, and I assume he'll help him out a little bit. Like, I would think Godwin would be less impacted by going from Jameis to Brady than Mike Evans is, because Mike Evans is such a downfield deep ball threat.
Right,
but
right.
I'm not convinced that it doesn't hurt both of those guys. Like Jameis, he threw a ton of picks, and obviously Brady is, you know, you trust him to win the game, and he's going to throw way fewer interceptions and all of that. But surprising to me, like, I don't know. Like, my guess would be that both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin actually are less productive statistical players next year with Brady compared to Jameis Winston.
We'll see. I don't know. Maybe he comes back and proves us all to be idiots and has a tremendous season. I'm not betting on him, but I'm not. What's that?
So they just had to throw so much, right? Because, like, Jameis would throw a pick six to start the game, and so they're just chuckers with Jameis. So it was so much volume. It was like, okay, he has 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. And so for the receivers, they would just put up these monster counting stats, where I feel like Brady's going to be much more methodical and not as much of a stretch-the-field guy. A bunch of texters, by the way. Addison Russell giving up number 22 to Jason Hayward.
Including Shep had that one on our text thread.
Shep had it as well. Okay, not a surprise there. Yeah, that rings a bell. I don't remember if there was any reciprocation, though. Did Hayward throw him a bone, so to speak? Did he do anything for Addison Russell for the jersey number? I don't remember.
Not that we found out, no.
Huh.
After that contract, he must have.
Yeah, you'd think so. You sign $184 million to give a speech and catch the ball once in a while. You can give him something.
And knowing what we know about Hayward, giving, you know, David Ross the suite for his family on the road, remember that? So yep. Hayward, a generous guy, so I'm sure he took care of him.
Yeah, got to take care of him. Got to do something nice for him.
This segment is brought to you by Denny's. Denny's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Order your favorites from Denny's at Denny's.com. Pick it up or have your Denny's favorites delivered right to your door with free delivery. You're hungry. Denny's delivers for free. Order now at Denny's.com. Everyone's telling their Bulls stories of yesteryear in anticipation of The Last Dance. We've loved doing score stories, bringing people on for the express purpose of telling stories. So Tom Doerr, he was behind the mic for 5 of the 6 Bulls titles. He'll be all over this documentary, I'm sure. Tom Doerr going to join us for score stories next. McNeil and Parkins on The Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.